John Barber, our special guest, his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Spells his last name, by the way, B-A-R-B-O-U-R. But we've got that link for you. We're going to come back and talk about the Garrison tapes as well, and then how he developed his program, Real People, with these very strange types of folks that he would find all around the country. So we'll be back in a moment. We'll also take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, John Barber with us. So, John, you're a film critic now for L.A. Magazine. You're doing it for NBC.
And when they wouldn't let me do the review of the Codename Zorro, I went to my attorney, George Bain, who represented Paul Moyer, who was one of the anchor people there. He was my attorney, and I said, listen, I want to sue NBC. He said, what for? I said, they're violating my First Amendment rights. He says, you don't have any. I said, what do you mean I don't? I'm going to be an American. I'm an American soon. And he says, no, you're an employee.
That's it.
NBC
big difference.
Has a First Amendment rights. So you start your own newspaper, your own magazine. And then the next time they came, but they called me back because people missed me.
They missed you, right.
I thought John was supposed to review something tonight. They brought me back. I reviewed Codename Zorro. The government did not collapse. As a matter of fact, it got worse and worse. The other time I was kicked off the air is I reviewed negatively the Jerry Lewis telethon. Okay, now, I must tell you, the people that I have met who have the most terrific but sickest sense of humor are doctors and cops and news people, because they see the worst of everything, so they have a sick sense of humor.
They do that to desensitize themselves.
That's exactly right. Well, after Jerry Lewis finishes his telethon, everyone in the newsroom gets up and sings, "You'll Never Walk Alone." It became a tradition. Every
sure.
year it was very funny. But this one show I watched, I was so offended by Jerry Lewis. He started off by saying, "I am here to correct God's mistakes." And I thought, what an egomaniac. And then it got worse. So anyway, I tear up my film review, and I decide to review Jerry Lewis, and I start off by saying, they used to call it the muscular dystrophy telethon, but now they call it the Jerry Lewis telethon because one day they hope to find a cure for muscular dystrophy. They'll never find one.
You were that guy. I heard about you.
Yeah, so then I ended it up by saying they had raised $30 million. They could raise twice that amount if every man, woman, and child in America who didn't want to see him again sent in a quarter.
Wow.
Well, I got to tell you, I got thrown out of that building so fast, and they had to hire a guard to escort me, and I had this plastic Studebaker, and they shut out the windshield. Anyway, I get a call from a fellow named Bud Yorkin. You know Yorkin and Lear?
No.
Yes, Yorkin and Lear created All in the Family.
Oh, that, okay.
Yeah. Well, Bud is downstairs, and he calls me, and he's laughing. He says, would you like a drink, kid? And I said, no, sir, I don't drink. He said, come on down. You're going to need some company. So I went downstairs, and he looks at me. He has drinking. He was a pretty heavy drinker. And he says, I'm going to tell you something I'm never going to tell anybody else. You can do with it what you want. He said, I'm going to tell you, Jerry Lewis tells you that he got into this telethon because he had an uncle that got muscular dystrophy. Well, that's a bunch of crap, and here's the story. He and Norman Lear were the original writers on the Colgate Comedy Hour. That was hilarious. Dean Martin at their absolute ad-lib best were brilliant. Anyway, the president, they decide to do an hour telethon for muscular dystrophy for one of the sponsors.
All right, a legitimate telethon.
A legitimate telethon. Jerry Lewis had never heard of muscular dystrophy. Nobody had heard of a telethon. It was the first one.
Wow.
So Norman and Bud wrote all the scripts. All you got to do there is read this. Then he told me, as a result of that, how he profited financially. I'm not going to tell the story now. It's in the book. But anyway, that's the kind of thing that happened to me. So anyway, when I'm brought over from the AM show, I'm sitting down. My first day at the job, Kelly Lang comes into my office, looks at me. Are you the new guy I'm supposed to sleep with? So I was stunned. Well, they had brought me there to co-host the Sunday show with Kelly Lang. She hated the fact that I was going to be on her show, okay? Do you know the name Ellard Lowenthal?
No.
Well, he was a congressman, one of the very first politicians to question the assassination of John Kennedy. And he was going around giving speeches, and he was booked on the Sunday show. I went to the producer. The Sunday show is 90 minutes long on a Sunday, of course. I say to the producer, just give me Ellard Lowenthal to talk to. She can have everybody else. And the reason I'm interested, because I've had a couple of phone calls with Jim Garrison after I've been fired from my show. Anyway, Ellard Lowenstein comes on. Kelly Lang is supposed to leave the set. She refuses to leave the set. So I ask the first question, Ellard.
And you're live, right?
I beg your pardon?
The show's live, right?
Yeah, absolutely live. And he is stunned that somebody knows about this case and knows about Jim Garrison. And we have the greatest conversation for 12 minutes. Kelly doesn't get a word in. Then we go to commercial break. During the break, he stands up. You son of a bitch!
No. Can't say that. Can't say that, John.
Oh, I'm sorry. He starts swearing at me. And it's a commercial break, right? She quiets. She doesn't quiet down, but I stand up, thank Mr. Lowenstein, and then I get ready to leave, and she's still yelling at me, and I said, Kelly, the only thing you know about the death of John Kennedy is the day it happened, it was 78 degrees. Well, the crew started howling with laughter, just screaming. The next day, I'm called into the program director's office. And he said, I hear you've been spreading serious rumors about me having an affair. I said, I beg your pardon? I hear you're spreading rumors of me having an affair with Kelly Lang. So I started laughing. His name was Phil Mayer. And I said, Phil, you got to be an idiot. She'd never have an affair with someone like you. And he was offended. And he said, why would you say that? I said, because you're only local. So anyway, he gets promoted to Chicago, becomes the general manager of the Chicago station. A kid named Steve Edwards is hosting the morning show. He goes to L.A. Phil calls me and says, can you fill in for 2 weeks? I go to Chicago. When I have a guest, George, I read the book because I can read fast.
Right. Me too. You've got to scan really fast.
Comes on. There are two sentences in his book. He said the Watergate hotel break-in had nothing to do with McGovern because McGovern was only getting 30% of the vote. Nixon was going to get 70%.
He was going to win anyway.
That's right. What were they after? They were after Larry O'Brien's files. Now, because of the Bay of Pigs things, now, you know that when Nixon always and Haldeman talked about the assassination, they called it the Bay of Pigs thing. So he comes on the show, and I tell him, I read your entire book. I'm really interested, but these are the two sentences that compel me. And he is so relieved to be able to talk about what he's been thinking about for years. And he says, I'll tell you, John, Larry O'Brien and the CIA put together the hit team at the Modelo's Desert Inn that was going to go in and get Castro. At the meeting were Larry O'Brien, Robert Mayhew, John Rosselli, and Sam Giancana, and a few other hoods. That was probably what backfired to kill John Kennedy, because they couldn't get Castro. And he was so pleased to tell that story. Anyway,
and Traficante was involved in that,
yeah,
too, wasn't he?
Traficante, but he didn't. He had a representative there. As a matter of fact, Jack Ruby was the guy that Traficante sent to Cuba, because when Castro took over, he didn't nationalize the gambling casinos right away. And Ruby was the liaison to talk to the new Cuban government about keeping them open for Traficante. But he did have a guy with Mo Dalitz at the desert. And anyway, 2 days later, George, a group of lawyers take out an ad in the Chicago paper complimenting ABC for hiring this guy, meaning me,
you
to do a show that made the morning so interesting. So I said to myself, my favorite American writer next to Mark Twain is Ben Hecht, who wrote the best autobiography Show Business Autobiography, and he was a famous columnist in Chicago. He wrote he was the highest paid screenwriter in Hollywood. He wrote Gone with the Wind in 30 Days, George, and never read the book. He only read a synopsis. You might remember that Selznick shut the production down. They brought in Ben, and in 12 days, he wrote that classic movie. Anyway, I thought, I love Chicago. The people were great. They would not hire me because New York thought I was too controversial because I had brought that up. So my wife, who knew Danny Arnold is a great, I'm going to tell you about how weird show business is. You know the show Barney Miller?
Great show.
Great show. Didn't start out great. Do you remember a show called That Girl?
Yep.
That Girl.
That was with Marlo Thomas.
Marlo Thomas. It took place in her office and in her home. Anyway, Danny Arnold, who was the co-creator of Barney Miller, he has half of the show for the first 12 episodes in the office and a half at home. And Chris Hayward, who was my son's godfather and a dear friend, was producing the show. He went to Danny Arnold and he said, listen, you remember Detective Story with Kirk Douglas? Make it a half hour of The Precinct. And Danny Arnold says, nobody's going to watch a dirty precinct for half an hour. So what Chris Hayward does is he writes a script where there's a snowstorm in New York. They cannot go home. Anyway, that's the 13th episode. They are going to be canceled by ABC. Richard Schickel sees this show and compares it to Detective Story. ABC is so impressed they pick it up. But guess what? Danny Arnold does not believe it'll last. He keeps the girl who plays Hal Linden's wife under contract for 5 years and only uses her twice.
Jeez.
That's how dumb and lucky some of these things are. Anyway, my wife goes to see Chris Hayward. Chris Hayward goes in to Danny and says, listen, John has this great idea for a reality show. So they hire me for $1,000 a week to create the show there.
Was that good money then?
Oh God! It was a fortune. It was 1978 when that happened. Now, when I leave because they won't hire me in Chicago, they hire this guy named Charlie Rose, who's so god awful they get rid of him immediately. And Charlie goes south and goes on television for nothing, just to be on the air. And now he's Charlie Rose.
Now he's a giant.
He's a giant, right? Okay, he's a giant in television, but he's a midget intellectually. Okay, now, when they get rid of him, they figured, well, we've tried two white guys. Maybe we should try somebody black and female. And in from Cincinnati, they bring Oprah Winfrey.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Now, Oprah is adorable, and she's wonderful in Chicago. It's only a local show. And so she says to ABC after she becomes successful, hey, I'd like to be on the other six stations you have. What people don't remember is that when I was in television, George, you could only own five stations.
That's right.
Five newspapers.
You could have five VHF and two UHF.
That's exactly. And the other thing is they had the fairness doctrine, and they hated the equal times thing. So when I had Reagan on my show, I had to have a Democrat, then I had a Nazi, then I have a
socialist. That's right.
Everything now, there is no such thing as equal time anymore. Bill Clinton, the worst president in American history, killed that with the Communications Act of 1996, which turned 95% of all our media over to six corporations. And that's the woman that wants to be president of the United States. You see her commercial.
All right, well, get into real people, though, before we run out of time here.
Iraq, when she voted for that war, what about the kids at Waco? I mean, Donald Trump is not using the right tactics to truly bury that woman. She does not deserve to be president of the United States. Anyway, back to the show. Anyway, Oprah is turned down by ABC. I have two friends, the King brothers, and they syndicate this show called Our Gang.
And they're both passed on now, right?
One from drugs and one from a heart attack, okay? So what happens is the King brothers take Oprah and turn her into the giant that she is because ABC was too dumb.
Did they syndicate you?
No, no, no. Everybody was always afraid of me. Look, Oprah was wonderful in television. She does a lot of feel-good stuff. She's helped a lot of writers. But I must tell you, it's another useless billionaire. If I were in a position to be Oprah Winfrey or Denzel Washington or Bill Cosby before he started drugging women, the story that I would tell, the movie that I would make, would be of the greatest American entertainer, political activist in history, black or white, and that's Paul Robeson. The bravest black man in America who did all of this long before the NAACP.
And a great singer.
Oh, an unbelievable singer. And what a movie, or what a play, or what a one-man
show. Well, you talk about the Sinatra singing Old Man Winter. I mean, the Old Man River.
Yes, the first Showboat.
He was amazing.
Anyway, so what happens? I end up working for Danny Arnold, and guess who I want as my black son, my Byron Allen. You know who Byron Allen.
Oh, he's great.
Oh, well, okay, he wasn't when he was with real people, but he's very rich now. The dumbest human being I ever worked with, which I'll tell you when we get to real people. Anyway, what happens, I want my Byron Allen, to be Richie Pryor. And we have the deal at ABC. And I go in to sit with a guy named Lou Ehrlich. And I name names because I don't like to hide behind softness, okay? I tell it like it is. And I tell him, Richard Pryor. And Ehrlich leans over the table and says, that nigger is not getting on this network.
John, I'm going to have to stop the interview.
Okay.
Your language is out of control. Okay? Just simply out of control. I'm sorry. That'll let you go. Folks, I apologize for that. Things that he was doing. I'm going to go to open lines. We're going to start next hour. I'm going to do it now. we will do it. You've got the numbers. I've got a couple calls here. Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to, I was very interested in the statement that politics is the entertainment division of the military-industrial complex. And specifically, I wanted to ask about the Kennedy assassination, about the use of body doubles. And allegedly, there was a body double for Lee Harvey Oswald. And in other assassinations, there was apparently a body double for James Earl Ray in the Martin Luther King assassination. And it appears that the entertainment industry may be complicit in supplying actors. I don't know if you would call them actors, but at least doubles who double for politicians, who double for assassins, who double for players. And this is an unusual. I mean, you know, Churchill in World War II had a radio double who delivered all of his speeches, and apparently there was a radio double for Franklin Roosevelt. So that was my question, was the use of body doubles in assassinations.
Well, you may be absolutely right. I mean, that has been a possibility for a long, long time. We're going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with open lines for the rest of the night. Well, welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to have open lines when I come right back for the next couple hours and a half, as a matter of fact. Sorry, but I had to bounce John Barber off the show. He was a delightful guy, had some great stories. But the things you did not hear, I did. Thank God for the button. It's unacceptable to me. And I will not get on this program. And what's the old saying? Once, shame on you. Twice, shame on me. Three times, no. So that's the way it is, and that's the way it will be. So we're going to come back in a moment. We're going to take open line calls. What's on your mind on Coast to Coast AM? Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. And I got to tell you, so I watched the entire debates last night. And we covered it in terms of news reaction over the past couple nights. But I thought Clinton was slick. I thought Donald stumbled, but he was real. And when all these non-scientific polls came out, other than CNN, he was way up. It's an interesting phenomenon. It really is. Anyway, let's go to your calls. Friday, we've got open lines, but we've got some spooky stuff to talk with you about. I'm looking forward to that. John Zaffis and Rosemary Ellen Guiley will be with us to talk about some really spooky things. But that's what Friday night open lines are all about. But tonight, what's on your mind? So let's go to the phones. Joe in the Bronx to get us started. Hey, Joseph.
Hey, George. How are you?
Okay.
I wanted to ask you about a story which you've mentioned maybe a couple of times on the show. I wondered if you could recount your experience in Mexico. It was a harrowing experience involving, I believe, Mexican police. Can you recount that for us?
It was not Mexican police. I wish they were there. Let me tell you what had happened. Went to Cancun for a wedding, and a friend of mine was getting married down there. And after everything was done over the course of 3 days, we got back into a limousine van, okay? A limousine, it was just a van, but they call it a limousine because they have a driver, to take us back to the airport. Now, in the van, all of a sudden, he starts driving through a very seedy area of Cabo. Very seedy. It's not the same way we came in. It's very, very seedy. And I'm looking around and I'm going, this is not good. And he's nervous. The driver's nervous. And he's talking on a two-way radio. It's not a cell phone, but a two-way radio. And he is just shaking like a leaf, sweaty. And I'm saying, oh, this just doesn't look right. There's something wrong. And I'll tell you my take on his involvement in a second. All of a sudden, in the middle of this seedy area of Cabo San Lucas, the van breaks down. Just literally comes to a stop. And he's talking on the two-way, not to us. He's talking to people on the other end, and you could hear people yelling at him, and he's yelling at them in Spanish, and he's really nervous. All of a sudden, I realize this is going to be a kidnapping. And cars start showing up, right? They start showing up. And I figure, you know, we got to get out of the back seat of this van where we're sitting, and the bags are behind us. So I reach for my door latch, right? And I pull the door latch up to unlock the car. It has been sawed off.
Wow.
It breaks off in my hand. I can't open the door. I can't open it. And the only way to get out at that moment, as these cars are coming, we grab the bags and we jumped out the front of the limo van where the driver was in the front, while they're looking at us and they're arguing with each other. And I pull out a $100 bill, and the car is coming by, thank God. I hold it up, and the guy stops, and I just say, I need to go to the airport. And he says, come on. And we jump in, and we're gone.
Well,
I get back, and I call some friends, and it hits the newspapers, and Homeland Security gets involved. And they said what it was going to be an ATM situation where they ATM you, right, until they drain you, and then they kill you.
That was their
thought, and it was the strangest feeling. Look, I'm a concealed weapons permit holder, Joe, but you know what? Not in Mexico, and you're helpless. You don't have any recourse. And my take on the driver was they threatened him and his family because he didn't look like he was part of this group. He was too nervous and too uptight. What a story, huh?
Oh, incredible. Oh, God. And did that shake you up? I mean, did that give you, like, bad thoughts about returning to Mexico in the future?
Yes, and I kissed the ground of the United States when I landed back in L.A. When I got out of LAX, I got down on my knees, and I kissed the sidewalk.
Wow.
I mean, it was one of those situations.
Oh, definitely. Great story, though.
Yep, sure is. Did you watch the debates?
Yes, I did.
What'd you think?
You know, it's tough to summarize. I think that, in my opinion, Trump had an edge on, like you said, appearing real. I think Clinton had a little bit of a robotic appearance.
Yeah, she was stiff but polished.
Yes, she was. Yeah, you know, she's a consummate politician. Plenty of experience. I'm looking forward to the next debate. And I understand there's also going to be a debate in Las Vegas. It should be interesting to see what the battleground states do after the debates.
Yeah, we're going to have to sit and watch. The next ones, of course, will be in Washington University in St. Louis, not too far from where I am. I'll be flying in that Sunday night, so I'm going to miss it, unfortunately, but everyone will let me know.
Well, okay, but I wanted to ask you a question on those debates.
Yeah.
Who do you think might have the edge after all is said and done after these three debates?
I'll let you know after the three debates.
Okay, good answer.
Okay.
All right. Take care, George.
All right. Let's go next to Cornelius in Alexandria. Welcome to the show, Alexandria. Hi, Cornelius.
Hey, George. Boy, I tell you, I miss you and Tommy. I've been listening. There was some caller that said, well, there's a guy named Cornelius. He's with that God, Guns, and Gold, and Bible, Bullets, and he's ready and everything. And I'm telling everybody, and just like you, George, and Glenn Beck, and Jim Baker, you're trying to warn people to get ready in case we have an economic collapse or a political chaos or race riots or religious riots and all like that. Because people need to be prepared and have food and stuff like that.
You have to be.
I wanted to thank the Coast to Coast listeners, too. You know, we had all this flooding, though our place didn't flood or nothing, but in South Louisiana it was real bad. And I know y'all getting ready to come to New Orleans next month. I'm saving up every penny I can so I can see you and talk.
Oh, I'd love to meet you.
Well, we're going to get together. I'm going to see you, and I'm going to finally meet you for a change. So, you know, George, like I said, you and Tommy, and you saved Tommy's life, so I'm glad you saved yourself from that Mexican situation.
Oh, my gosh. That was something. That really was.
How's Mark Bell doing?
I don't know. Since the last report that we got from Heather, his former producer who's now doing a show, he was getting better, but I haven't gotten an update yet.
Yeah. When you get a chance, give us an update on that maybe Friday if you can.
All right, I'll work on that. You got it. And we take your texts, we take your tweets, and we have Tommy that does it.
We have a tweet to start, and I thought this was apropos considering. George, you're a great host. This is from Rick, by the way. So how do you deal with a guest you don't believe or disagree with and still keep your composure, or in this case, a potty mouth?
Well, there's a big difference between agreeing with a guest and someone who lets loose with his tongue a little too much. So number one, this program and me specifically, I have no problems with people that I don't agree with giving us their views. I mean, that's what it's all about. Look,
we have
guests on all the time, and I don't necessarily believe or agree with them, or if I do, it's not what should be part of the story. It's what that guest says and what you as a listener believe, and that's what I want. So I'm not going to get there. I'm not going to, because somebody agrees with Trump or Hillary, I'm not going to argue with them about that because, one, it's endless, and, two, it's their opinion. And so that's the way I look at it. Now, the one thing that gets you off the air on this program is profanity. And that's one thing I will not tolerate or accept, nor will the FCC, by the way.
Yes.
And look, this is some people may call it old school because there are words that you can get by with on the air that I still find unacceptable because I take the position that what if a little kid is listening to this radio show? You know, as adults, you might be able to handle it. You might be able to handle it. But as a kid, you shouldn't have to hear that from a talk show host or a guest. And it's unacceptable. Now, in this particular case tonight, I was entertained by what he was saying.
Oh, yeah.
Those stories were great about how he was progressing. Now, I wanted him to get to his Garrison tapes, and we eventually would have. But when the language got over the edge that our listeners did not hear.
No, they didn't.
I want to point this out, that you may be at home going, what'd you kick him off for? If you had heard what I had heard, you would have done the same thing.
You know what baffles me is over the years, we've had just a few guests who kind of get that way. But we tell them, like we almost give them a chance, like the first time, and then you tell them
Well, here's
they keep going.
Here's the dangerous part. I don't think they're doing it on purpose.
No, That is the dangerous
part. They slip it out. And when you slip it out as many times as he did, it's unacceptable. You just can't do it.
It's a shame because I was looking forward to the JFK stuff.
Oh, me too. Me too. He's a great guy. I mean, but just can't do it.
We try.
Okay, next up, let's go to Barbara in Los Angeles on the wild card line. Hey, Barbara.
Hi, I just wanted to say I really appreciate Howard Bloom because I'm a Hillary supporter.
All right.
And he makes me feel really hopeful with his analysis.
Do you like the way we try to balance it with, the Howard Bloom, who's the supporter, and John Curtis, who, you know, is pretty nonpartisan in his reports, but he is a Trump supporter?
Well, I kind of wish you had Howard Bloom on a little bit more.
But that's not fair. You got to try to balance it.
From what my experience has been, I think John Curtis comes on a bit more than Howard Bloom does.
Well, Howard was traveling over the last week or so and was unavailable. But other than that, I try to get them both on at the same time.
I just really appreciate him and his enthusiasm. And
so you're voting for her, I take it.
Yeah, she's not perfect by any means, but
would you prefer two different candidates than what we have right now? If you had a choice, two totally different candidates.
Well, I voted for Bernie in the June primary.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
So you would have preferred Bernie over the two of them?
Absolutely.
Well, it's not over yet, is it?
I mean, I just loved Bernie. I don't know what the right word is. I just kind of resonated with him.
All right. Thanks, Barb. Thanks for your candor. Appreciate it. Let's go to Julia in Salt Lake City, Utah, west of the Rockies. Hi, Julia. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a couple of comments. One was about Trump and one's about Hillary.
All right.
I haven't decided as yet.
Okay.
But I think Trump got just as many hits in there as what Hillary did, because if you were watching Hillary's reaction on some of the answers and words that Trump did, I've grown up with people that the minute you get that where they don't like what you're saying, they start turning into little children. And she had the, Hillary had the expressions on her face that I thought, maybe I wouldn't want her as president. She's spoiled. She wants her way. And it's about nobody else's. Now, Trump, she was right with Trump also. He needs to do a couple of things. He needs to tone it down and really get busy and say the right things. So I think if either one of them won yesterday, I don't agree. I think both of them.
So you would, sounds like, Julia, you would prefer if we had two different candidates in there right now.
Yes.
Yeah. I get that, and thanks for calling. I get that from a lot of people. They may pick one or the other, but almost everyone I've talked to wishes we had two other candidates. It's really strange. Regardless of who they're going to end up voting for. We have Julie in Ontario, Canada. Hello, Julie. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hello, Art Bell's...
Replacement.
Wonderful replacement. Aren't you amazing? I've been listening to you since way back.
Well, thank you.
And
going on 14 years
pretty soon. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I saw a UFO when I was about 17 in Montreal, and I had a friend with me. We were coming home in winter. I said to her, look up at the moon. There's a green ring around it, and that always means snow in Montreal. So she looked up, and I looked up, and a big orange orb went right across from one horizon to the other and then went straight up. She looked at me and said, oh, my God, did you see that? And I said, did you see that? And we were so spooked, we ran all the way to my house, whereupon she called her father in the control tower in St. Hubert Airport. And they caught seven of them on radar.
Wow.
So he said, you definitely saw that.
They showed up on radar. That's amazing, too.
Now, from that moment on, we both knew this was real because there was someone with us that gave us, you know, the same view. So she, every time I speak with her now, she lives in Ottawa, she tells me, remember when we saw the UFO? There's no question when you see one, it's uncanny.
And you never, ever forget it.
In the air and nothing else does.
No, no. I mean,
so over the years, I've been listening to you all the time. And what a wonderful support it is, because once you see one, you can't go back and unsee it.
No.
Especially if you have a witness. You can't be a person who doesn't believe. Now, no one else around you believes, and they think you're a little crazy for believing and doing all kinds of research about it, but I love the research. I am fascinated by the science of other people living on other planets that are visiting us.
Well, just imagine what might have been in the craft, whether it was robotic or other living life forms controlling that.
Absolutely. To think that we look at this still with the attitude of you're crazy if you admit to seeing something, instead of being scientifically entranced by the fact that there are other worlds, other scientific worlds, such as Michio Kaku's attitude of first-level planet.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do the research and open your mind, it's such a wonderful scientific thing to look at. It's the most exciting thing of our time.
And like you say, Julie, once you have seen one, you'll never forget it. We've got two more hours to go now of open lines, so we'll be right back.